Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. I'm your host, Stone Payton, and in the studio with me this morning is my good buddy and co-host, Lee Cantor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Stone. How are things in your world?
Everything's going well. The last relative left Sunday morning, and we're ready to get after it now.
That's right. The holiday season seemed to stretch an awful long time. When you have like Christmas and New Year's in the middle of the week, I think that it's very disruptive.
Yeah, I agree. So, we're going to get things off to a great start this year. And for our first episode in 2013, we are going to get a chance to visit in a little bit with CEO of Sales Tracker, Steve Youngblood. But first up on the High Velocity Radio this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce Matthew May, CPA, with Cherry Beckert. Welcome to the show, man.
Hey, how are you?
I am doing well. You know, we've met before. I think we have probably seen you at an event or two, maybe even had a chance to interview you briefly when we've done remote broadcasts. But you pop back up on our screen for this 40 under 40 thing. What's that all about?
Oh, it was kind of a exciting honor. I mean, Atlanta Business Chronicle picked 40 people under 40 that they thought had, I guess, made a mark, and
this
they
is
were,
like the People Magazine sexiest people list.
That was it. I'm pretty sure.
That's how I would take this.
They did ask for a headshot. I can confirm that. So I would like to think my looks played a significant role in getting me that.
Didn't it hurt you? It did not hurt you.
So
what happens when you're 40 under 40? What is there a banquet? Do they give you a trophy?
You get to go to a banquet with CeeLo, and you just
CeeLo will be there?
Yeah, but he videoed it in. It was kind of disappointing. So.
Well, I'll tell you, the first thing that happens is he doesn't ask the producer to turn the headphones all the way up before the show like you do.
Why?
Because you're getting old. That's why.
Exactly.
The guy's under 40. So is it something you apply for? They reach out to you? How does this work?
They do have an open call. People can nominate you throughout the city, and lucky enough, I was nominated. They picked me. I don't know how. I think they go in a room and sort it out. So it was pretty flattering that they put me in that category. It was a nice group of people.
Now, why don't you talk a little bit about what you guys are up to at Cherry Beckert?
Well, right now, we just changed our name to Cherry Beckert, which was very interesting because the whole marketing thing of going through Cherry Beckert and Holland, and you would think accountants could make a decision about that pretty quick, but we just changed our name.
Couldn't count the votes?
Couldn't count the votes. All the partners got together, but that was interesting. So we got a new, fresh logo. We're really focusing on technology companies right now as part of the impetus for the change.
As a firm as a whole or just your practice?
As a firm as a whole, I'm particularly focused on it. You know, if you'll see my Twitter name, it's the Tech CPA,
right.
And I'm almost solely focused on technology companies here in town. So that's the focus of the firm going forward.
Now, in the past, the focus had been broader than technology?
It really is, but you see in the U.S. economy, what's growing is the technology space. And,
right.
And especially in Atlanta, you look at the health IT sector, you look at the security sector, you look at the marketing automation sector, why we have Steve here. All those things are really booming in Atlanta.
Now, can you share a little bit, because there are a lot of companies, especially some firms that have been around, like you guys have been around for a while, and you make a change, like a name change. That's a big change. That you guys didn't just think of that one day and said, the next day we're going to do that. Can you share a little bit about that conversation, what it was like? Somebody brought it up. Somebody said, hey, we got to make this shift. And when we make this shift, it can kind of refocus us on this other aspect of the business. Can you share a little bit of the mechanics of how that came about?
Sure. It's really interesting that one of the guy that's in charge of our marketing and running our markets really take a hard look every year at how we're presenting ourselves to the market and how we're talking about what we're doing. And the old name and the old logo was a little stale. The website was a little stale. Today we're going live with the new website. It's a little fresher. One of the big things in public accounting, we rely a lot on young talent coming out of college. So like it or not, we have to focus a lot on appearance. Are also not just for the talent, but for
so when you're
our
saying
clients.
Talent, you're not saying that not the clients, but people who to work for you guys.
Right, we recruit pretty heavily. If you just think of the Atlanta market, you know we're hiring between 10 and 15 people out of college each year.
Right,
just in Atlanta. In the U.S., it's closer to 100 to 150 people that we're hiring each year, all off college campuses. And that just becomes critical. Social media is so important to influencing that. And people are looking at websites. The first thing, the parents are looking at the website. I mean, it's interesting dealing with the new generations.
So you're the tech CPA. So you're hanging out with tech folks. Are you hanging out with startups in that world as well, like the, I don't know, the Hypopotamuses, the ATDCs, those kind of folks?
I do. We have several clients in the ATDC, and what I'm doing this year, starting off the year, is Wednesdays starting at 1 o'clock. I'm volunteering at Hypopotamus. I actually go there. I'm starting actually this Wednesday. I'll be there from 1 to 5 doing open office hours. Yeah,
wow.
Just doing open office hours, hanging out with the startups, helping them and however we can. It's basically our way of investing in those companies to get them whatever advice they're looking for, either the tax or just accounting or general business or now, just the lay of the land.
Now, what do you think some of those conversations are going to entail? They're going to are you booked up for this Wednesday?
I have
working on that.
They're working on booking me up for Wednesday. It's supposed to be really casual, open kind
of. Oh, it's an open door. It's
an
not
open
a,
door policy.
You don't need an appointment.
You don't need an appointment. That's kind of how Hypopotamus runs.
Right.
I mean, you guys. I saw you guys down there. It's a very free form kind of place where you're just supposed to be there and help the
right.
community. So I thought I'll do my part. I'll pitch in. And they said Wednesdays. You know, that seems to work Wednesday afternoons.
So you don't know what to expect.
I've done it before. I worked out at Strongbox West before.
Right.
It's a little bit of everything. I actually get a lot of work done myself, but also you tend to hit one or two people every couple of weeks that you really can contribute and really answer a question they won't ask.
What's an example of some questions they ask you?
Lots of basic questions about filing
tax
returns.
Well, basic to you.
Well, to me, that's the point. That's the point of me going down there, right?
Right, but I'm just curious. Like, what is it? Do they fall into the kind of the same areas?
They tend to talk about formation and what kind of company to start with. Do
right.
you an LLC, a C corp, an S corp? What kind of company?
So, what's the answer?
Generally, it's an LLC.
LLC. Okay.
You ask the tax guys in my office, and they'll tell you the LLC is so. It's so malleable.
Right.
You can kind of make it anything you want. It's just less restrictions. And it's been around long enough now to where it holds up under all the tax.
Now, what about, like, because some of those firms are going to, maybe they're bootstrapping it at first, but they might get funding later. Does an LLC work in that environment as well?
An LLC works all the way up until you have a sophisticated investor, like a VC come in. Typically, a VC doesn't want to see the income pass through to them, so they'll make you convert to a C corp. So that's a common thing. We've worked with our clients at the ATDC who've just raised some money. We've had two or three that have converted from an LLC to a C corp because of a venture capital raise.
Mm-hmm. How much money would the raise need to be in order to make that transition?
It's not the amount of money. It's the kind of company that's putting it in. It's typically if your investor doesn't want the pass through income or losses. Then they make you change, but the type of investment is running around $3 million.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be the level where the VCs are either syndicating or coming in. That's kind of the low end right now. Everybody below that tends to be an angel
right.
round. So,
is this surprising you at all, Lee, the CPA hanging out at these places, the Strongbox and Hypopotamus and that kind of thing? This is still a little unusual. This isn't the way most CPAs go to market, is it?
No, it's not how most CPAs go to market, but if I was like most CPAs, I mean, I probably wouldn't be a CPA. So
why do you think you're different?
I just enjoy the business side of it a lot more than a lot of people. People ask, what's the difference between most CPAs? There's a lot of CPAs, you hear them called service providers, and they don't mind it. I like being known as an advisor more. So like almost anybody could do a tax return for somebody. There's
almost anybody.
Almost any CPA.
Are you saying I can just go online and buy some software and do a tax return?
No, most of the tax CPAs in town, though, are very good and capable of doing a tax return for
right.
anybody. And there's really hard to distinguish between those folks. So that's a good service provider to me. But an advisor is somebody who focuses on a sector who can help you beyond that.
So how do you help somebody beyond that?
Well, if you just think of the fundraising process in and of itself, that's a very complicated process. But you can waste a lot of time talking to the wrong people.
Right.
You know, in the venture capital market, I mean, there's very specific people that deal in health IT companies, that deal in security companies, that only invest in that sector.
Right.
If you're trying to target those folks to raise your money, you're wasting your time in a lot of cases if you're not in their sweet spot. So just helping people through that process, making sure they have the right attorneys, making sure they have the right other advisors around them.
So you take that kind of consultative, you know, relationship with your clients?
I do with the people that treat me as an advisor. So I think
is that an additional fee to be treated, or that's just part of how you operate as an individual?
That's just how I operate as an individual, and I have to say some of my clients don't use me that way. Some treat me like
they're missing out though. Maybe you should send them this interview.
I think you could argue they're missing out a little bit, but.
Well, because I would think that you have a unique perspective. You kind of see kind of best practices and kind of bad practices from lots and lots of different clients. So you can share, I mean, obviously not specifics, but general best practices.
That's what I try to do, especially when you're sitting down with the CEO versus the CFO and say, okay, this is what somebody else in your space is doing.
Right.
This is what there's a fine line sometimes with direct competitors. I don't have that problem. I'm able to share quite a bit about what other people are doing in the community.
So you talked a little bit about funding, looking at some other aspects of the business. What are some common mistakes that you see people, particularly in a startup mode, making or traps that they might fall into that maybe you can help them stay out of?
Well, a lot of the traps, and I don't do any of the tax side, which is unusual, or not unusual, but I'm on the audit side of the house. A lot of the traps tend to be on the tax side of the house. It tends to be where they're not filing tax returns in certain states, and they think, oh, I'm losing money. I don't need to worry about that. I don't need to worry about the losses that I have in North Carolina. Well, that's all and good until you do make money in North Carolina, and then then you have to pay taxes there where you should have some credits to offset that. The other thing we're seeing a lot of companies not do is take some of the tax credits that can offset their payroll taxes. So a lot of people, especially and I'm thinking about some of the bootstrapping companies specifically right now, a lot of the bootstrapping companies that might not be making money or might not be profitable yet, some of the tax credits that Georgia's offering right now can offset the payroll taxes. So you have to go through an application process and get that certified, and it's a little bit of a pain, but if you have a good advisor as opposed to kind of a service provider just doing what you're asking them to do, they can help guide you through that process.
Now, can you share a little bit about, okay, say that I'm at the ATDC and, you know, we got something that we feel is getting traction. I run into you at Hypopotamus. And I'm like, okay, I want to engage your firm. Like, am I too small to engage your firm, or you're going to take a client like me?
I absolutely am. And the reason I am is I'm not going to make money on you for several years, but I'm going to try to acquire you as a client so I can build my practice five years from now. And that's one of the nice things about being under 40. Is I'm thinking.
So you're investing in me, kind of.
I'm investing in you. We created a product that has a tax price point, like right around the $1,500 price point.
Right.
We did a lot of research on that. As far as we wanted something that was small enough for everybody could do it, but big enough to where you had to. I mean, it's an advisor relationship.
So $1,500 is that I got to pay a couple hundred or $100+ a month, or I pay $1,500 on April 15th?
I can do it either way, but most people are doing it, deferring it and doing it later.
And then I'm getting access to you, like when I have a question, and
absolutely.
That's included in my $1,500?
We do. We created a four-hour consultative block.
Right.
Where you get 4 hours of solid consulting time, however you want to use it. So that was one of the things that I thought that was important, because we do want to create that relationship that where you're an advisor versus a service provider. So we do include that block of time intentionally.
Now that's not including like kind of bookkeeping, regular upkeep of that I still have to get. But this is kind of just the general tax, like if there were 1099s or things like that.
Right. That's usually doing the K-1s or your 1040 or something like that that was the initial product we've come up with. We do have a bookkeeping product that I'm talking to that group right now about what they can offer the bootstrappers.
So what's next for you coming into the new year? Anything new beyond what you're doing down there at Hypopotamus?
Well, we have a technology summit coming up in March. That's the TAG Technology Summit. So I think that's the first time we got together and did this thing. So we're working on getting the top 40 innovative companies identified right now.
And you're a judge?
Yeah, I'm co-chairing that committee this year. It's interesting. One of the neatest competitions in town because the criteria is like who's got the cool technology.
Thing, right?
It's who's got the wow factor on their current
product.
And they're
all coming to you. And you're like, wow, that is cool.
That
and
is
they're like,
cool.
Oh, that one's cool too.
Yeah. So we had the lettuce growers last year. That was pretty fun.
Podponics.
How are they doing? Those guys are great.
Are you working with them?
I'm not working with them yet
right
now.
That's a good one though, right?
That is a great one. Then we had the year before the guy that created 3D images using the light from his iPhone. And that,
I don't remember him.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
We had a lot of 3D. We had the other guy, 3D imaging guy.
Right, that...
Viziers?
The general guy. The
Brigadier General is the way I remember him. But...
There's also the guy that does the 3D imaging of the ears. You stick the thing in your ear.
I have a memory of that.
So that was cool fun, though. Yeah, that was TAG, right?
Right.
That was the Spirit of Endeavor?
No, that was the top 40 innovators for the technology summit.
Now, and there's some charity work you guys do as well?
I'm involved with some charities here in town. The two big ones I'm involved with are the Georgia Aquarium and Refugee Family Services. So that's
Is that as a firm or you personally?
That's me personally. So
your firm involved in any kind of give back to the community stuff?
Each of the partners try to contribute and sit on several boards around town in whatever kind of we can be impactful, kind of whatever our passion, wherever our passion lies, we let each individual kind of pick that, and then people tend to gravitate towards those things, and we can do projects as groups as those come up.
So is the whole team edgy like this, or are you the real maverick, and they just kind of let you run, and it started working a little
You're
bit,
like
so they gave you a little more rope?
I don't know if they call me edgy or kind of a pain. But
I think it's fantastic. I can see why you made the list. Yeah.
But I definitely stir it up in the community and then around the office a little bit. So
what do other accountants think of you?
The competitors don't really like me very much right now. I think most of the people in the technology community like people that tell them the truth. I'm one of the only people that they've told me that will talk about the economics of like how I make money and explain that to people so they can be real as transparent as possible. And so they're like, oh, I kind of understand how your business model works. And then they understand I'm a business person too, and I'm trying to make money and then help them make more money as well. And those two things aren't necessarily mutually exclusive. You can work together.
Now, at a lot of these early stage companies you work with, do you become kind of a CFO-y type person? I mean, I don't want to say
CFO-y.
Well, kind of some of the stuff that a CFO would do, because a lot of these technology firms, they're not accountants and they have no idea about the business side. They have some cool technology.
Well, I can definitely, if in the situations where people have a heavy controller and don't really have a CFO, you can definitely fill that role. One of the companies here in town that I've been working with, a digital media company, they had that situation. You can have really good relationships with CEOs and build real strong relationships
that's what I would think.
You can have friends for life, basically. So I really enjoy when we do have those kinds of relationships. It's just more fun.
For you, right? Isn't it more rewarding when you get in there and you can say, you know what, the business model, that sounds great, but if you do this little tweak, this might be a way to leverage some of your assets.
That's tons more interesting to me, but I'm also a public accountant that left public accounting and actually did a startup for 4 years, so I kind of had that in my blood.
So you have scar tissue.
I have scar tissue. Had a successful sale and kind of got it in my blood and kind of got addicted. So that's how public accounting is how I stay plugged into to 20 or so at a time, which is a lot more fun than doing one.
One, right.
Well, before we let you go, let's make sure that our listeners know how to reach out and get in touch with you. So give us your coordinates.
Well, on Twitter, the Tech CPA, or I'm blogging now, thetechcpa.com. That's some of the people in the technology community asked for just more information about accounting and stuff that people are typically seeing. So I've been putting some content out there. That's the easiest way. Or ma@cbh.com. That's my email.
Now, the new website, and is that happening or is that?
The new website's up today, cbh.com. Should be great. I haven't seen it yet. I'm banking on it being great.
All right.
But he only wants you to slide by there real quickly, then head out to his blog.
Or go to Hippopotamus on Wednesdays at 1 o'clock.
That's right.
There you go.
I'll be there.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you in the studio, man.
It's always fun, guys.
Yeah. Oh, and also, Hippopotamus is in the arcade level at
the Biltmore.
At the Biltmore Hotel.
Yeah, that was fun. I really enjoyed visiting. We got to go out there more, at least 1 to 4 on Wednesdays.
Exactly.
Right?
We'll know somebody there. Well, actually, we know probably half the companies.
Seem like we knew a lot of folks there. Hey, listen, how about hanging out with us for a little bit while we visit with our next guest?
Sounds like a plan.
All right. Next up on the High Velocity Radio Show, we have CEO of Sales Tracker, Mr. Steve Youngblood. Welcome to the show, man.
Good morning.
Well, we are delighted to have you. Look like you got some value out of that last conversation. I saw you nodding your head, taking notes.
Absolutely. Well, I started my career as an accountant, so I respect what Matthew does. And not to mention the fact that most of us in the startup community, when we're building our companies, we're thinking about selling our companies. And so what he provides, I plan to be down at Hippopotamus Wednesday from 1 to 4.
I don't blame you. Sales Tracker, what's this thing all about?
So Sales Tracker is a sales CRM application, or more specifically a Salesforce automation application. It's squared directly against the big boys. We call them the evil empires, Sugar CRM, Salesforce.com. But we're really more designed for small to medium-sized businesses, although we do have a few large customers. It helps them get up, get going, get their sales teams set. In many cases, it's a small business, so it could just be it helps an owner and his salesperson get going to track all of their contacts, accounts, sales opportunities, interactions with all of those, and have it all in one place so that they can improve their sales performance.
So when you're going up against some big players like you are, what's kind of your thought process and the strategy and how you're going to differentiate yourself?
Well, we try not to go up against the Fortune 5,000, Fortune 1,000, Fortune 500.
So you give that to them. You concede that.
They've built a great business model to address the needs of those large customers. So where we differentiate ourselves is in with the smaller customers. We're faster. We're very high touch. You can talk directly to the owners of the company, myself being one of them. We provide customer support. Myself being one of the support agents, we sell the product. We have salespeople. I'm one of them.
There's a theme here. Are you hearing it?
I can see that.
You heard Matt earlier talk about startups, and we're still after a few years still a startup. But we differentiate ourselves with high touch, an extremely modern application. It's really fast, easy to use, and it's less expensive than what the big guys would provide you. And we're adding features on a daily basis. In many cases, we'll have a customer say, gosh, I sure wish you did this. And we'll go, hold on a minute. And 15 minutes later, it's doing that.
So what's the backstory on this thing? How did you fall into this or jump into this?
Or you were a disgruntled user of one of those big products, and you're like, why is this so complicated?
Well, I think most of us that have been in software companies or been in technology companies, or really any company, have used Microsoft Excel or we've used some other sort of Salesforce automation product and found flaws. And so that was part of it. I was speaking at a technology executive roundtable meeting back in 2007, and another ATDC person heard me speak and said, we need to talk. And it was with that we got together and formulated his build out of the application and launched it in early 2008. So it really was, he needed someone he could work with that had been a startup guy, needed someone who could sell and market while he engineered. And we both felt like we had something that would let us go into certain parts of the market and be successful.
And this is in the cloud, right? So we can access it over the web.
It's all accessible over the web. It's all in the cloud. No need to have any specific software. You can have a Mac, a PC. You can have a Chromebook if you like. They all work.
You hear that, Lee? I got a Chromebook for Christmas.
Excellent. Excellent. And you can use any browser you like. They all work fine. And you know people have their particular likes. I'm a Mac guy who likes Firefox, but then again, you can go to someone who has a PC running Internet Explorer, and it doesn't matter. It works the same regardless.
So now, are you targeting the person who's never used the CRM system or is just doesn't want to pay the fee for a Sugar or a Salesforce?
I would say that half of our customers are converts. They've come from other applications. Many times they're coming from real old applications. If you've ever heard of ACT.
Oh, yeah.
Or Goldmine or Maximizer. These applications provided great value back in the day, but a lot of them are still run on PCs. A lot of folks want to be in the cloud, and a lot of folks want something newer, jazzier, more flexible. And so the other half of our customers are truly stepping out of spreadsheets and notes and
index cards,
sticky notes,
index cards, and Rolodexes.
Absolutely. And so a lot of times they're the harder ones to get going. Once they do get going, they're customers for life.
What about the transition cost or the pain in the butt factor, or whatever? If you're on one of these big behemoth things and you kind of get a chance to take a look at your thing and say, "Wow, that's a little more attractive," but isn't it just a pain in the butt to make the change?
A lot of times it can be. I've spoken with customers right here in Atlanta who are using some of those large applications, and they've invested $20,000, $30,000, $50,000 in customizing on top of those platforms or more. And for these smaller companies to think about maybe having to spend money again, it's painful. However, sometimes the pain is so high that they don't mind spending money to convert. And I do think that's another differentiator we have. We're not in the professional services business. So when we create custom code to make our product do exactly what they want it to do, it's really inexpensive because we're not looking to make money off of the professional services. We make money on the application, and that's the only place we want to make money. We want to sell you an application. We want to sell you a subscription. We don't really want to sell you teams of people that have their pup tent in one of your offices that are going to keep billing you on a day-in and day-out basis. Don't want to do that.
Now, in terms of your clients, do they kind of cluster around certain industries, or do you have a sweet spot?
We've done particularly well with financial services. Now, not just any financial services. We've done well with those companies that have large bases of independent agents. So think about Mass Mutual, who sells life insurance and sells annuities, or think about...
What about CPA firms?
CPA firms could use... Well, more and more CPA firms are just like Matthew. They're becoming quite sophisticated. They have marketing groups, and they reach out, and they're acting more as consultants nowadays. So their business has expanded. So we do have a few accounting customers, and I have both here in the U.S. as well as in the U.K., and met with one of my customers in the UK recently. Amazing that she is acting a lot like Matthew. She has a group geared around women entrepreneurs, and so she'll meet with them. And I got a chance to go meet with her recently. And so it can be any business. Accountants are just like any other business. They have a need to reach out to their customers, keep track of them. Matt's looking 5 years out for some of his future technology customers. So they want to keep track of them. They want to note their interactions. They want to be able to sometimes send, slice and dice their database and determine what emails they want to send out. And in some cases, set up marketing campaigns that will drip on that customer over 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, even longer. So we do address the needs of even CPAs.
So how do you go to market? Is it largely technology-driven, web-based stuff, this kind of drip campaign stuff? Or are you out there sitting down and hanging out with people? Or
mostly using technology. So we have lists of potential customers, and we're doing outreach to them using our own technology as well as some others to drip on them, to send them email campaign notes. And that's been one way. The second way is we've been purchasing leads from companies that generate leads for SaaS, software as a service, companies like ours. And that's providing us about 10-15% of our leads. The rest is coming directly generated by ourselves. We also buy Google AdWords. We post in every potential directory that's out there. The list that we do have, I'll make cold calls. So the old-fashioned way. So we use about every technique we can to get people in the door. And it's quite hard when you're a small company in Atlanta, bootstrapped as we are. So we don't have a lot of extra money to go out and splash around a lot of advertising, nor do we have people on a board that can go out and recommend large customers that can be our anchor or base. We've had to get those ourselves.
You had to earn every customer, huh?
Everyone.
One at a time.
It's been a battle. It's been hand-to-hand combat for each one to get them in.
Now, take us through, because if, say, somebody's using like a Salesforce or a Sugar, and they're like, you know what, I'd like to check you guys out. So try to sell me on and why I should switch and how you're going to help me. Walk me through what that engagement's going to look like. Yeah, I'm on the fence. I'm about to switch, and you're going to allay my fears about switching to your product.
Yeah, the first thing we're going to do is get them into the free trial. Let them know that they can self-provision themselves, that they can request support and get it right away. Obviously, at that point, we're on the hot seat. We need to show them that the high touch we promise is actually there.
Right.
So that's the first key. With a larger company, some of the large ones out there, they have support centers that might be overseas. Nothing wrong with that, but gives people a lot of concern if they know that the person might not understand what they're saying or might not understand the context of their business. So that's the next step, too. We try to jump on that right away and let them know that we understand what they do here in the U.S., what their concerns are. We use GoToMeeting. We use Google Hangouts. All types of things. I also create lots and lots of custom screencasts. So when a question comes in, the customer says, I can't figure out how to do this, I'll go back and create a quick screencast with my voice, with a header, with an intro and an outro, a little bit of music in between. The customer thinks, my gosh, the guy didn't just leave me a voicemail. He sent me a...
I had to solve my problem. Video.
They saw it. And so, believe it or not, we will invest hours of time, even for a small customer, because once they're in, the referral network kicks in. And that's really where we're seeing a lot of new customers come in, too.
Is the referrals.
Are the referrals.
Do you have channel partners or partners in...
We have a couple. We have one in Asia that's selling our product for us in Southeast Asia. And so they represent themselves as their own company, but they also say, we are Sales Tracker Asia. And it's been a difficult thing to figure out in the past when you had a reseller. They could go out and take your license keys and download your software and install it. There's none of that anymore. The servers are located here in the U.S.
Right.
And so they're like sales reps for you. You're doing all the work still, right?
Essentially, they're sales reps. So it's hard to figure out how you pay them, although they're...
I bet Matt knows.
Matt would know.
Yeah, we try to help with that.
The other thing that we're starting to do right now is we're starting to integrate with other applications, and that acts as a channel of distribution. Although we too will act as a channel of distribution for those other SaaS vendors, we're right now integrating with a company here in Atlanta. The name of the company is Payscape Advisors. They have a billing application called Billing Orchard. In the next few days, I don't mind announcing it early because we aren't listed anywhere. We're not a floated company. We'll be integrating with their billing application, and that'll be a way that we can bring customers to them and a way that they can bring customers to ourselves. So I think integration with other SaaS vendors will be a great way to not only find customers but to compete with the larger vendors that have already that functionality built into their product.
Now, that's a great point that you bring up about these kind of joint venture partnerships like this. Can you talk a little bit about how that bubbled up and how you were able to kind of work together to create a solution that's best for both of your companies and your customer?
Absolutely. Well, fantastic nowadays. Most of the SaaS vendors have simple APIs to work with, so you can quickly integrate another application into yours. Secondly, CRM applications are viewed nowadays as the database of record in most organizations. That's where all the customer data is.
Right.
So an ERP application wants to pull from there. An accounting application wants to pull from there. And so our application is a natural to integrate. But where it came about with Payscape, I just looked at the Inc. 5000, saw a company in Atlanta, and said, I need to go talk to those guys.
And so you just cold called?
I just cold called them up, and they said, we'd love to talk. As a matter of fact, our customers keep asking us, what CRM applications do you integrate with? So it was a quick chat with those guys, a quick understanding of how we might share revenue when we do business together. Met with their primary technical guy, and it took about 5 minutes to realize that we could do what we both wanted to do together. So I created a definition of what the proposed integrated product was. They looked at it and said, take that out, add this one in, and that was it. It's nice to work with other entrepreneurial companies because you can put together partnerships rapidly.
And you can be that nimble.
You can, within days,
literally, from coming up with the idea to having an agreement, it was probably, you know, minutes in terms of what a big company would be able to do.
Correct. I would have to ask them, in a large company, have to ask the marketing guy, but in this case, that's me.
Right.
I would normally have to ask the communications director about the schedule for putting out the press
release.
And
then do like a PowerPoint and a presentation sell it up the chain and, you know, get board approval.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And we were able to do that, myself and the co-owner of the company. We did that in about 5 seconds.
Right, over coffee. You know?
Yeah, so. No, it's really, being here in Atlanta is also greatly helpful, too, because there's a lot of startup companies that are eager to compete with the powerhouses out in Silicon Valley, in Austin, Texas, up in Boston.
So we're a challenger brand ourselves here in Atlanta.
That's right.
Exactly. So I think that's the key thing maybe we can do more and more here in Atlanta, where capital is a challenge. There are some good investors here, and there are people that are putting money into companies. But for those of us that are bootstrapped, the best thing we can do is try to integrate our products together and go out into the market together and pitch ourselves together. And perhaps that's a way not only we entice new capital in the future, but perhaps we entice customers even more.
That's right. And everybody gets stronger.
Now, is this mobile movement impacting your world at all?
It is. And last year, we embarked on building our first mobile app. We built a prototype. We hired a company here in Atlanta to then take it to the next stage, and we're now ready to put the money down on the development. We would have done it ourselves, but there are a few companies here in Atlanta that have great capabilities in building these mobile apps. Not just because they look cool, but they also can help you make sure that you're established into the iTunes store properly, that you can get established into the Google Play environment appropriately. And plus, they've built them for other companies. And so you get the benefit of their past experience. And they know all the mobile application development environments on the market. So very soon we'll have an app here. But in the CRM space, most people want to be able to leave their office and know that no matter where they go, they can pull out their phone or pull out their iPad or their iPad mini or their Android device and immediately find that contact, see the opportunities and the interactions that have been out there and hit call or see their tasks that are outstanding. So it definitely is impacting us. And I had someone tell me recently, he showed me, Steve, this is the future of sales in America. And he just pulled his phone out and put it on the table and said, it's all right there. I don't want to go back in the office once a week maybe. So it definitely is impacting us.
Fantastic stuff. Let's make sure our listeners know how to get in touch with you.
Yes. My email address is steve@salestracker.com. That's salestracker.com.
And there's a free trial, you said?
There is a free trial. It's 15-day. But if you're listening today, just send us a note. Let us know you heard us on this radio program.
And you can have 16 days.
We will. And if you tell us you're looking to buy, we will extend it. If you have to call the big company to extend your trial, it takes board approval. Well, we're the board.
Exactly.
So we want your business.
What a great way to kick off the new year, huh?
Yeah, good stuff.
Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor. And our guests today from Cherry Beckert, Matthew May, and from Sales Tracker, Steve Youngblood, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.